Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
All right, we is recording.
Okay.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
I'm Kate.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
For now, anyway, I'd like to welcome you to Spiritual Home. As a client of Spiritual Home, you've already shown that you're someone with an enlightened aura. Someone better, like me. So, I'd like to suggest that you also support Dumpty Dum at patreon.com. If you do, you can get their extra content. It's the actual meaningful stuff, not the usual drivel. It doesn't matter how much you sponsor them for. I think they're pretty desperate, to be honest. Okay? Patreon.com. And, obviously, if you ever need a vaginal steaming, you know where I am. Blessings.
You know what? You know when something's a genius, when you've heard it 1,000 times over and you still titter. Well done.
I know. It's the way she says steaming. That's what makes me laugh every time. Steaming.
I just think it's just the phrase steaming as well. I think you and old Cambridge did a great job there. But folks, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality doctor drama that has centered an Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the wholesome, nutritious pregnancy meal that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the Frey Bentos pie that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Jenny Darling's overfeeding folks is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is again the academic archers, because we've had like a full stop on Dumpty Dums, Lucy.
Have we?
I haven't had a fresh one other than the academic arts are sending us two versions of the same thing in possibly since the new year. And I don't think I'm exaggerating.
Right. Get cracking then, chaps.
Right. So, Lucy.
Yeah.
If the great Dumpty Dum listening public want to pull their fingers out and send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or think that a pineapple can assuage grief, then call us on 0203 0313105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Andrew the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek, of course, for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek has kept up his snow clearing. They had quite a lot in Ambridge. Auntie Cardboard had a good 6 inches round the back.
I was just on the phone to me dad, literally just before we started recording. And he said that he went to church on Sunday and he said, son, I was going to do a West Indian accent, but I won't. Right. He said, son, in all my born years of being in England, I've never known it to be so cold. But yeah. He said only 7 people turned up to church, and my mom and dad were the only 2 people that didn't have a job to do. So, like, you know, the projectionist came, the organist, the vicar, obviously, and the only 2 randoms were my mum and dad, but there was 7 people.
But well, anyway. That means they're going to heaven and the rest are not. There we go.
But then he said that it's incredibly balmy today. See, like a summer's day today.
Yeah, it's really warm.
God.
But yes, it's all gone
climate
mad.
Change.
It's like the weather's gone, oops. Sorry. Yep. No, that was, I don't know what happened with the snow there. That was a bit of a, just forget that. Move on. We're going straight into spring now. Spring, spring, spring. And that's it. That's what we've got now. Yes.
Well, it was a tiny bit nips here last week in Northern California. But other than that, it's been glorious as always.
Oh, shut up.
On this week's episode, we hear calls from Jacqueline Berto, Miss Mid-City. Oh, she's back. Oh, I love her. Witherspoon, Catherine Roan Jones, Valerie Bayliss, Vicky Cole. Oh, my Vicky. Cosmo and Dudley. I can't wait for the Vicky Cole email. But first, before the emailer inners, let's brace ourselves. It's the best bit of the show. It's Lucy V. Freeman's week in Ambridge. Oh, Christ. I do this every time. I wind myself up and then I forget to do this. Oh, God. And then it's too low. Oh, God. Right.
We began the week at Grange Farm, where the massed ranks of the Grundys were acclimatising to Nick's passing in their own idiosyncratic ways. Joe led ponies round and round the village, Ed climbed a ladder, Clary chopped fruit, and Will announced that he didn't want to eat stupid soup. Wise move, Will. The last thing you need is more stupid. Lots of people came and bought things. I had no idea people bringing other people fruit baskets was still something people did. But Justin turned up with one from Underwood's food hall, one would presume, rather than some baggy satsumas from the bottom of the Dower House fruit bowl. I'm going to miss Nick terribly, said Alan. I'll have to do that bloody nativity next year for a start. Jennifer is having a lovely time stropping about. She's basically... Well, she's burst. 40 years of hedging, making excuses and living in denial have finally pushed her over the edge, and she is blaming Brian for everything from the fall of Rome to the bloody bunting, and Brian is slinking around like a kicked sheepdog. He did try and make excuses. There was a time in the 70s, Jennifer, when I was heavily overextended and everything had dried up, he said, and Jennifer said, that's not what Nathan said in that loose box. Neil is looking for a new home for his pigs. Don't worry, Neil, a new house you've never heard of will unexpectedly come free. Alice is still being weird, but sadly no one cares why. If anyone can summon up the energy to give a toss, it's because Alice has been contaminated by the TCP and the smell is driving everyone out of Price Bowman. In a distressing scene, we heard Roy and Lexi getting it on before their dinner at Toxic Farm, or trying to. Lexi has come up with an excuse so brilliant for not having sex with Roy that she should nail it to the village notice board for use by any other unfortunates who may find themselves at the mercy of Roy's affections. I cannot have sex with you because I am waiting to be gifted with another man's sperm. Can't say fairer than that. Oh, said Roy. Please. No, she said firmly. We have to be more creative and sensual. You put on a little apron and go in the bathroom and, yes, said Roy excitedly, give the grouting a good going over and I will sit here with my feet up watching Holby City. Kate's in it. Once he'd got the grouting sparkling, they set off for Toxic Farm. It was something of an awkward evening, in my view. Now, I don't go to that many dinner parties, not like every week or anything, but I have been to a few, and normally you start off by asking people how the job's going, commenting on how nice the food is or whatever. I don't remember ever any asking anyone how their sperm was looking. It's just not come up. Anyway, Jennifer gave everyone the rundown on Adam's little swimmers with the air of a proud mother commenting on her son's A-level results while everyone choked on their starters. Do you think I've oversalted the mushroom soup? Asked Jennifer. The whole new meaning of the phrase, come dine with me. Roy was not enjoying himself at all. Jennifer was as sympathetic as only she knows how to be. Oh dear, are you not enjoying that salmon, Roy? Would you prefer something more working class? I'm sure I could rustle you up a Finder's crispy pancake. The BL board wanted Brian to talk to them about the contamination and Brian desperately wanted to keep it quiet, but Adam got wind of it and started running around excitedly. Why don't I do a presentation to the board? I've got really good sperm. No, no, Adam, go on. Please, no, please. I won't do music or the cartoon figures this time. Over at Brookfield, Pip is sorting out the new milking parlour. She wants herringbone, parquet flooring, double glazing, ensuite bathrooms and Wi-Fi throughout. Then she got bored and said to Ruth, no, actually you do it. I'm going to be too busy for cows because I'll be playing with the new calf. No, not calf. Kitten. You know, whatever it is, that thing I'm having. Pink. P- Piglet. No, baby, baby. I'll be too busy teaching the baby to jump or whatever it is that they do. Toby is still determined to get Pip airborne. Come on, Pip, it's the worst weather for a decade. The beast from the east and Storm Emma, let's get you up there. With his customary sensitivity, he was impervious to the mood of the village and sounded perky as anything, considering one of his co-workers at the Bull had unexpectedly died. He tried to persuade Rex to take on the Wieners. I can't possibly do that, Rex said indignantly. Not with my busy business enterprise of doing Sweet Fanny Adams. What kind of an entrepreneur rejects new business because it might interfere with his running, for crying out loud? And finally, back to Toxic Farm, where Brian's little world is collapsing round his ears. Brian came in to eat lunch and found he had turkey feet and chips while Jenny Darling was preparing pate de foie gras with quail's eggs for Lexi. Well, Lexi is carrying first-class sperm, Brian, and quite frankly, it's a long time since yours has been up to snuff. Jennifer has Brian in a stranglehold over whether or not she's going to reveal the fact that he knew all about the TCP dumping. He's sounding increasingly hysterical while she's whisking around the kitchen singing, maybe, maybe not. Tell you what, Brian, tell Rory. He won't tell anyone, not until he's 17, and before he does, he'll have to introduce himself to everyone anyway. By that time, you can be sunning yourself on the Riviera with Mandy Beesborough, a pot of Viagra in one hand and a copy of a two-week out-of-date Borchester Echo in the other, telling everyone who'll listen how you once nearly became Borchester Businessman of the Year. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. The end.
Oh, that was a triumph this week. That was deliciously naughty. Well done. Well done, you, Freeman.
Thank you very much.
Just before we crack on with, yes, with the meat and potatoes or the Fray Brentos pie of this week's show. Since when has Will lived at Greenwood Cottage? Wasn't it number one, the Green?
No, number one, the Green is the house that he also owns. Huh. His Greenwood Cottage is Nick's name for Casa. You know, he called it Casa Nuevo. When he lived there with Emma, it was Casa Nuevo.
Wasn't it Emma that named it that? When he was living with
Emma. Yeah, Emma and Will called it Casa Nuevo. Then they left, and then Emma left, and then Nick moved in, but she wanted to change its name, and she wanted to call it Greenwood Cottage. But number one, the Green is the house that he bought with the money from his inheritance from his aunt. Was it? No, his godmother. No, it wasn't his godmother. It was that. No, it was an aunt that died, and she gave Will lots of money and Ed nothing. Ed. Yeah.
But what did he get from Caroline? Caroline gave him something. Did she give him a cottage? Or I'm confused.
She gave him some money in the inheritance, but she gave Ed some money in the inheritance as well.
But he had. I thought that Caroline gave, because she was his godmother. She died, and Will was upset that Ed also got money. But before that, didn't she give Will a cottage?
No.
Are you sure? This is a Cosmo and a Dusty thing. Caroline gave Will something substantial. And I thought it was the cottage. And then he became a gamekeeper and then had another one. Hence, he rents out the other one. That's the way I thought it went.
I take issue with you there, Royfield, but we'll have to wait for Cosmo to confirm.
Yeah. There's a lot of Cosmo action, really, on this show at the moment. Right, so, Lucy.
Yes.
Thoughts and feelings before we go to the gate caller in on the last week's dumpty dum.
Loving the Aldridges. Mm-hmm. Brian on the back foot. Jenny just absolutely smashing him in the nuts repeatedly with a cricket bat for 40 years of betrayal and everything else. And she's just. You know, but you do sort of think, Jenny, you turned a blind eye to God knows what because it suited you. And now he's been caught, all of a sudden, you know, you're Mrs. Moral High Ground. And that's not so good. I'm finding the Will stuff quite hard to listen to. And especially when he had a go at Joe, I really didn't like that. But, you know, Will's quite difficult to listen to anyway because he's an arse. And it's quite difficult, I think, because Pip, we had a scene with Pip, like 2 seconds after they were all talking about Nick dying, we had a scene with Pip and she was remarkably breezy and fine and everything. And I thought, ooh, somebody's taken this very lightly. And then thought, it's so hard to sound convincingly in mourning. It's hard enough to know how to respond to somebody who's very recently suffered a bereavement when you meet them in real life, but how to act that awkwardness is really, really hard.
No,
because one minute Eddie sounded quite breezy and the next minute he sounded really low, and Clary sort of sounded on the verge of tears and then she sounded fine. But, you know, I suppose it is like that.
No, listen, absolutely. And I suppose the older you get, and this, the more kind of stoic you are about it, because you've seen it happen before. You know, it's still a shock.
Yeah.
It's still horrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. As I forget who said it, you know, you just have to put one foot in front of the other and keep going on. But, you know, definitely with all the foreshadowing, we kind of understand that what the fight in the ball, Nick dancing with Joe, was to make everybody feel guilty, you know, even more than normal, because Nick Grundy was a weird kind of semi-peripheral character, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She wouldn't really ever drive any storylines. She's just kind of this chirpy, overly nice kind of voice that kind of drifted in and drifted out. You know, almost like a counterpoint to Will. He's just a malevolent, evil voice that drifts in and drifts out.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really do an awful lot. But I must admit, I actually thought there would have been more people in the village just saying, crumbs, what's happened there wasn't that terrible.
It kind of seemed there to me was like a lot of shock.
No, like everyone just getting
everyone seemed remarkably
business.
Accepting. Ooh, yeah. She died. Yeah. Oh, dear.
You know, if it was Peggy Woolley, fair enough. You know, well, she's 92, she's had her time. But, you know, not at whatever age Nick was supposed to have been, you know, late 30s or something, you know. But yeah, because I hadn't listened to The Archers for however long. I hadn't listened to it from Nick's death until, I don't know, let's say Wednesday, Thursday, literally a week. So I sent out a little tweet saying, you know, I'm going to have to, like, get me Kleenex next to my iPhone whilst I'm listening to the podcast. And everybody on Twitter said, no, it's been remarkably little.
Business as usual.
Yeah. Carry on with the lambing, you know, it's just that's what it was. But I agree with you. I'm loving the Aldridge dynamic and the whole conundrum dilemma, do they tell the kids, et cetera. But, yeah. I was touched, I am touched by Joe. And the actor plays Joe, whose name I forget, but you will now remind me.
Edward something, I can't remember who.
He's knocking the ball out of the park. He really is.
Yeah.
And the little chat with Tony, with Neil, you know, absolutely brilliant, really touching. And you felt the old codger's pain. So, you know, stand up, do one of these. I haven't done this in a long time. No, really, really, really touching. Right. Shall we do some calls now?
Yeah.
All right, then.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first, Lucy?
Jacqueline Berto.
All right, then. Here is Miss Berto.
Hi, it's Jacqueline Berto from Saint-Gouin here in France. I'm about to go off and finish packing my bags because tomorrow me, Mr. B and Emily are going to New York. Well, in fact, we're going to New Haven in Connecticut first. But from next Wednesday, the 7th of March, we're going to be in New York just until Friday. We've got 3 nights there. And the lovely Lonnie, our Witherspoon, has organised, set a date and a time for us to have a New York get-together, so at least I can see one other Dumpty Tummer. And so I wanted to make sure that everybody who's in the New York area knows that we're meeting at 7:30 next Wednesday, the 7th of March, but I don't know where. And I've sent messages to Witherspoon to find out where. So I'm sure he'll add to this. He'll add something on the website. But I'm looking forward to going. I'm overexcited because I'm going to see my daughter for the first time since last Easter. So carry on the good work with Dumpty Dum. Bye.
Wow, that was not so much there.
Well, I don't think we need to make any comment. She has just made us all incredibly jealous, though, so that's good. Right, yes, have a lovely time. Marvellous. Should we do Miss Mid-City now?
Yes, let's.
Hello, it's Miss Mid-City. Just thinking about what's happened in the Archers recently, and I'm reminded of what Victor Lewis Smith said about the Beatles dying in the wrong order. It's occurred to me that maybe the Grim Reaper's been knocking on the wrong door in Ambridge, taking out Mark instead of Shula, Greg instead of Helen, Nigel instead of Elizabeth, Granny Heather instead of Ruth, for example, and now Nick instead of Will. It would be a completely different show if they had got rid of some of those people who I like less. Actually, I didn't like Nick particularly, but it's really mean to say, I know, but I'd rather Will had gone instead of her. I'm kind of thinking about my own personal experience of grief, which is really limited, but when I observe people who've suffered really serious, horrible, damaging loss around me, I'm used to grief being much more operatic, and I'm surprised that it seems really muted and low-key in Ambridge. Everyone's really stoic about it, apart from Will, who's imploding. So I thought it would all be ratcheted up a few volts because of the injustice and the suddenness of Nick's demise. And I was all prepared to find that Will was a much-changed man after his bereavement. I didn't expect to find him to be changed for the worse. I thought he'd be softened and somehow I'd feel sorry for him and start to like him or warm to him.
Nope.
Not a chance. I'm interested to see if the two children that are not his biologically remain in his care, because that would be unusual. He doesn't have parental responsibility for them and has no rights over them.
Oh, that sounds like the end.
Yeah.
Right. You didn't sign off, Miss Mid-City, but I do like her little smiley face on the website, you know. So
carry on.
No, I'm just going to say, and I know they'd say this talking all the way over your call, that is very harsh to say you'd prefer that Helen died over Greg, because he was an evil, messed up, dysfunctional.
No, Rob.
No, she said Greg.
She means Greg.
No, she's...
Yeah, Greg wasn't evil.
Greg was horrid. What are you talking about? He was jealous.
Greg who committed suicide.
Yes, he was jealous. He was vengeful. He was controlling. Not to the extent that Rob was, admittedly. He had this the way he used to talk about his ex-wife, Lucy. Come on. Greg was... Tony didn't... Nobody liked Greg. Remember?
No, I've forgotten. Yeah.
You know,
maybe
he wasn't quite.
Rob set everyone into relief now, so I can't remember what.
Yeah.
Who was nice and who was nasty? I do like when Miss Mid-City said that about. I know it's a bit mean to sort of have favourites and think, oh, what a shame! I wish they died and not that one had died. Mm. But this is your only opportunity. This is a valuable function the soap operas fulfil.
Docudrama fulfil,
which is. You can suddenly have little puppet figures that you can say, I want you to die. And then they do, you know, and it's like having a child where they said, and then he died. And then you just go bang and throw the doll down on the floor, you know, and it's sort of, it gives you that kind of weird sort of intoxicating sense of power. I mean, we're only the bloody listeners. Imagine what it's like for the script writers to sort of have that feeling of, I don't like you and I hope you die. Then they do die. And then you think, good, you don't have any kind of guilt feelings about, oh dear, I should have been nice. Or oh, I wish I hadn't thought that about them or whatever. Cause you just think, didn't like them, dead, good. That's it.
Funny you should say that. I'm going to reveal something now. I've always thought it a bit odd that New York Nigel was so bitchy about Jennifer. He hates her. And I thought, you're a vicar, man. You should have a bit more charity about you. But you're right. because it's not real, it just allows you just like all those kind of
And imagine how many Jennifers that New York Nigel has to put up with. And this is his chance to just go, I don't like her, I hate her, I hope she dies. And then if she does die, nobody gets hurt because it's not real. So, you know.
To be fair, is it Jennifer that he hates and Shula, isn't it? He can't stand the hair of them.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Robert, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Now, I understand that those of you in the UK were both celebrating and cowering from a few inches of snow this week. Meanwhile, on Friday, in central New York State, the residents there received 36 inches of the white stuff. Life goes on. And life goes on for the Grundy family. And I'm going to place myself squarely in the minority and come to the defense of Will, or at least show some sympathy toward the fellow whom we all don't like. As we listened to his range of affect this week, which did seem limited to anger, first at himself and then at others, we have to remember that he lost his young wife, someone he deeply loved, suddenly and dramatically. We can hearken to the paradigm of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. In fact, we understand that these stages do not occur in a neat and orderly line, especially after a sudden and unexpected death. If I were in Will's position, I think I would have taken to bed for a good long time. And what seemed missing this past week was the pure depression of his loss. But Will's lashing out in anger was a representation of both denial and anger. Look, Will is not a touchy-feely guy, and he very much sees the world through black and white lenses. He feels so very much that if he were present at Nick's final moments, he would have eased her journey to the other side. I think we'll see Will go through his own journey of grief, including depression, and that he'll at some point apologize to the people he's lashed out at. Will's procession to acceptance and hopefully to being a better person could be a special journey that the Archers take us on. But I'm an optimist. Talk to you all soon.
I don't know, you know. I don't know whether we're going to see the whole journey that Will goes through. I've got a sneaky feeling that in a couple of weeks, it's all going to be kind of forgotten about, which is somewhat sad because I think the character of Nick, who's played by Becky Wright, was somewhat underserved, and I think she's somewhat more complex than the writers really have written her, which is a good segue plug for me to say she's coming on Dumpty Dum. So yay! If you are a Patreon supporter of this podcast, you will get an extra podcast this week where I speak to the lovely, very spunky, very feisty, not at all like the character that she played on The Archers, Becky Wright. She is most awesome. What else can we say?
I love the idea of Will Grundy running the gamut of emotions from A to B, as somebody once said, focusing mostly on anger.
You know, that wasn't...
Yeah, it's...
That wasn't 100%. Correct, because he did have his moment of semi-reflection when, was it not Roy came round, Chris came round and stuff, and he said, did you see it last week? And he was softer, but with his family, it's pure anger. It absolutely is.
But he's just playing it over and over and over again because, you know, I mean, I know from my dad dying, I'm not going to start banging on about that again, but you do go back when it's that sudden, and his was sudden, obviously, you go back to the last time you saw them and you think about everything they said and everything that, and you think, what could I have done? What were the clues? What did I miss? Because you cannot believe that it just happened and that there wasn't, and that you were powerless sort of thing. I think that's a huge issue for people to deal with, particularly somebody like Will.
Yeah.
I think.
No, absolutely.
Should we do Catherine Rowan-Jones now?
Yes, please.
Hello, good evening, Dumpty Dummers worldwide. It's Catherine
Rowan-Jones
calling from High Wycombe here at 88 Ivy Fox on the Twitters with a voice even rougher than a badger's arsehole today, for which I apologise. Two things, having just listened to Sunday's episode, Joe's grief. Oh, dear God, Joe's grief is really getting me. It's like when Lear regains his sanity and finds he has the dead Cordelia in his arms and nothing can put it right. Dear God, Edward Kelsey can all fucking act. And on a light note, a much lighter note, I hear this evening that Adam has kindly offered Lexi a couple of hours drawing the covers over the newly erected polytunnels. Now, if that is not an enormous considered act of horticultural contraception, the application of a giant condom thwarting the endeavour of procreation, then I've been reading too much Cold Comfort Farm and myself. Thank you for everything you do. I love you all. Good night.
Good night. Oh, dear. 1 minute. I think we should play yes. that again, Lucy. And just say, yeah, just call good night on the podcast. Maybe I'll put that back at the on the end. That was good.
Yeah, Edward, she's right though. Edward Kelsey is Joe as Joe Grundy. Thank you for supplying the surname there. We couldn't remember it, Catherine. There is Cold Comfort Farm runs all the way through Joe's Joe Grundy, including his insistence of course. Hello, Shula Hebden. No, he doesn't say hello, Shula Hebden Noy, because that's too long. But he says hello, Roy Tucker. Hello, blah, blah, blah. He always calls everyone their surname, and it's like. Adam, and they always called Flora in Cold Comfort Farm. They always either called her Cousin Flora or Robert Post's child or whatever. They would never just call her name, and she used to say, do please call me Flora, and they never ever would, because there's always this sort of slight formality, but there's this sort of formality with a real piss take in it as well, a really sort of passive aggressive note, which Joe Grundy has beautifully, I think.
I never.
Yes, and I do like the idea of her yanking an enormous condom over all the polytunnels.
Obviously, I didn't read the books Cold Comfort Farm, right? But do you remember when it came on TV, the adaptation with David Jason? Was that good? Was it authentic?
I think you're talking about The Darling Buds of May.
Oh, good heavens. Right, let's move on to emails, and shall we?
Okay. Literature Corner with Royfield Brown. Gather round, kiddies, while Royfield completely
stuff,
gets the wrong end of the stick.
I'll just stick to superheroes.
Yeah. You stick to your colouring in, and I will do the books.
I've made a proper art of myself, then.
Valerie Bayliss. I think it's very sad that Will Grundy is such a one-dimensional character, she says. In earlier times, he was much more sympathetic, especially when he was so nice to Emma when she was having an affair with Ed. Now, however, he's just portrayed as a complete misery. Even in bereavement, he is made to be angry all the time, in contrast to Joe, who is shown the more realistic emotions of grief and anger in turns. Now that he's been widowed, surely we should be seeing some light and shade. They even gave him shades of gaslighting before Nick died. Absolutely. I'm also very upset that it's now sepsis lesson learned and get on with it. Oh my gosh, when my daughter died, just a tad older than Nick and with two young boys, the hospital were incredibly helpful with all sorts of advice, particularly regarding their complete involvement, and were so supportive to her husband and the rest of the family. Blimey. Valerie, that's awful, awful, awful. I'm very, very sorry. The thing is, I can't imagine Will, if somebody offered Will help, he'd say no, wouldn't he? He'd say, you know, if the hospital offered something, because that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of that. They don't just, you know, cut you loose, do they, these days?
I think there is a wider point that this is a drama full of contrasting characters, and not everybody's going to react to the same thing in the same way. So I think it's very realistic for Joe to have a completely different reaction to his in effect, his granddaughter, I mean, granddaughter-in-law, if there's such an expression, passing than to Will, because they're different people. Yeah. They're just different people. So I think it's slightly unfair to say that is two-dimensional. Will is, he has this, as you said last week or the week before, he has this love of feudalism, and then Witherspoon backed up by saying things are black and white. He's got a very simplistic view of the world, and he there is a ball of anger within him. Why he has it,
but he does seem to have got so much more bitter.
Absolutely. And I, as a listener, a listener of some long standing, I don't understand completely where his anger comes from, but maybe there is some level of jealousy. And I think it might have been telling what he said to Nick after the argument in the Bull about the fact that Ed and Emma were jealous because of things that they have. Yeah. And I think it's the other way around. Yes, Emma wants the material things that Will has. There's no question of that. But I think Will sees things in Ed which he doesn't have. The fact that he actually...
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And
Ed's ability to just get on with somebody, to be philosophical, to not be angry all the time, to just kind of...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And considering that out of all the Grundys, you know, by far financially is the most set up. Yeah, he's a Grundy of properties. He's got a good job. It goes on and on and on. You'd think he could just chill out and just be a nice person, but he's not. And I think we've got to pat the writers on the head, or the long-term plotting of the character, that he's descended this way. And again, and I think I said this last week, I think it's a very clever move that he is a gamekeeper and he has this pent-up rage. And the fact that he doesn't deal with people. Generally, what I've found in my life is that people who professionally are away from dealing with people are much spikier and difficult and judgmental, you know. Mm. So I think it's unfair what you're saying there, but the story about your own family loss is just tragic, and you know, thoughts go out to you. And as I said last week, I knew nothing about sepsis before all of this, and it's kind of shocking the amount of people you realize it has actually touched and affected by, you know, taking away.
And I was on the phone to my mum this week, and she said, tell Royfield to get a tetanus injection. So, because he hasn't had enough, you're supposed to have, I think it used to be, you had 5 injections and then you were covered for life. Then you had enough in you to cope with it. But if you were walking dogs and things like that, you should have it.
Oh, crumbs.
So go and have it, or my mum will have a go at you. And you don't want that.
Can I not wait till I get back to Britain, have it done on the NHS so it's nice and free?
Medical tourism, we know your sort. Vicky Cole now said, I couldn't avoid knowing about poor Nick, but now I have caught up and I'm feeling very sad. It came out of nowhere, which I gather is what sepsis does. So well done, the Archers, for the public information bit. Poor Will and the children, it's going to be hard listening. Can anyone enlighten me as to what might happen to Mia and Jake? Presumably Nick had main custody, but the children used to visit their father quite regularly. Sending very warm thoughts to all those who shared on the Facebook page and last week's Dumpty Dum about how they had been affected by similar situations. Well, Andrew, Nick's husband or first partner, I don't know if they were married or not, he's her first partner. He's now got the children, hasn't he? And Clary said, he's being really wonderful with them. But then they were returned immediately to Will, which seemed quite odd because they're not Will's children.
Mm.
Why would they? Why would he not just keep them?
I always got the impression that what was his name? Andrew, is it?
Yeah.
He didn't have the best relationship.
He wasn't that fussed.
Exactly. You got there. I was trying to say it and you got there. So in that way, it would make sense to me that he kind of like bung them back. But after saying that, Will's never been portrayed as having a particularly overly warm relationship with them either. He mentions them.
But not as often as he mentions Georgie.
With George, it's very clear he has a warm relationship with his son, but not with those pair. So,
No.
Mm. Again, looking at the foreshadowing, which we had a couple of weeks ago, when he was bouncing the kids you know, between various members of his family, maybe that's what's going to happen going forward. You know, it's always going to be a case of mum, can you look after Mia? Can you look after X and Y and Z and blah, blah, blah.
But he's going to actually have to legally get custody for them. And I don't know if he will.
You know what? I don't know enough of this. I would have thought, considering that he was married to their mother, that then there would be his.
It goes back to the birth father. If there's no reason why not, why it shouldn't.
Yeah. Hey, hun.
Cosmo, who is in Sri Lanka, the git, enjoying 30 degrees, he says. Dusty Substances is more or less right, he says grudgingly. The early crap farmers were the Gabriels. The Larkins were farm workers, not farmers. Suddenly, Eddie was having a tractor race, and the conceit was created that there had always been Grundys in Ambridge. I'm pretty sure they were the creation of the late William Smethurst, but cannot check references at present. My Susan had died some years before the microphones could detect the Grundys' voices in the village, he said. And William Smethurst pops up again from Dudley Butt, who has got in touch to say, re your stats on Right You Are and Hello You Two. The main repeated phrase is fair enough. I wrote to producer William Smethurst in 1978 asking him if it was a deliberate running joke by the scriptwriters to include fair enough as often as possible and pointed out that I had spotted what was going on. He sent me a letter in reply which simply said fair enough. And it has continued ever since. An average of 4 fair enough each omnibus edition. The last time I checked a couple of years ago, it is a running joke by the scriptwriters. I've never noticed fair enough, but I'm going to listen to it now.
But I don't know. For me, that doesn't quite have the same power. Maybe it did in the 1970s, because maybe fair enough wasn't such a colloquial phrase back then. So it was somewhat kind of jarring. But people say fair enough all the time. So I wouldn't notice that at all. Interestingly, all right, now I have mentioned this podcast before, but you, Lucy, would absolutely adore this. Lexicon Valley is... If you are into the English language, so I know before I used to champion, and I still do champion, the history of English, but Lexicon Valley is done by, a Mr. McWhirter. Forget his first name. Anyway, John, there you go. He's this brilliant African-American linguist who can speak more languages than were spoken on the Tower of Babel. And he goes into the entomology of phrases and words, and it's absolutely beautiful. And he's so engaging, Lucy, so engaging. So, and he talks about when you have films like, I don't know, like historical dramas set in recent history. So we're not talking about like Elizabethan times, but let's say hidden figures. So that's the story of the black women that worked for NASA. And he will say, they said a phrase in it. I'm going to say fair enough for the sake of argument, though, that they wouldn't have said that. And he'll said, but that is incorrect because that phrase only came about in 1975. And he just talks in a most engaging and beautiful way about how words and phrases change and how we think, because we hear them all the time, that they've been around forever. And one of the most engaging ones, which I heard just a couple of weeks ago, was him talking about the N-word. And as a person of colour, and because we are talking about it, I'll just say the word nigger. And then how that is very similar to girl and gal, and how a gal is not a girl, and a fella and a fellow. And whatever, and how, you know, these words are started off the same, but because of the way you pronounce it, have different connotations. So a nigger is bad, and that's what a white person says about a black person being derogatory. But a nigger means brother. You are my nigger. And it's the most fascinating podcast. It's absolutely brilliant. Lexicon Valley, please go listen to it. It's just, and he's beautiful and engaging. And he just has a conversation with you on that microphone. And he goes up and down and roundabouts, and he giggles, and he just, like, you know, shines lights on. It's just, gorgeous, 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 gorgeous. So please, Lexington Valley, go listen to it. So I got a call from Julie Hervey, who said, I went to see, it's about Black Panther, by the way, folks. I went to see it with my husband because I'm always interested in your movie and TV recommendations. Loved The Crown on Dumpty Dum. Interesting politically and refreshing to have an almost entirely black cast. Unfortunately, there was too much violence for me, and in the end, I had to leave early. There was a really small child in there watching that shocked me and was crying in the middle of it. I love and appreciate your enthusiastic reviews of movies and TV, but would have appreciated a heads up on the violence aspect. It rather gave the message to me that violence solves everything. So I'm a bit surprised, aside from the political aspects, that you loved it so much. Keep giving us your reviews, though. I love to hear them from a fellow British expat and listener of the great Dumpty Dum. Thank you for the email, Julie. It has to be said that I did kind of take a step back after getting your email. To me, I love superhero movies, and almost, well, not almost, integral to that is some level of conflict. Though these things are rated generally PG-13, which means that it's kind of, you know, there's no graphic portrayals of violence. Yes, it happens. People get punched or zapped with a laser beam, but you don't see heads flying off and blood splattering everywhere, because that's a different PG rating. So for me, I must admit, I'm somewhat blind to it. But you are correct that there are at least two instances within the film, the two times when T'Challa is being challenged to become the king, where the violence is actually bordering on another rating. And definitely where Eric Killmonger in the second challenge, that is a very visceral fight. You do believe that these are two people who are punching each other, and you feel the impact of those punches, as opposed to, let's say, Captain America taking down a whole load of baddies by slinging his shield type of thing. I think we are somewhat immune to violence on screen, and I will hold my hand up to that, because outside of watching it on the big screen, I'm definitely a pacifist, you know. I'm a lover, not a fighter, so to speak. But sorry that you didn't enjoy it. Sorry that you thought it was a little bit too much, because one of the genius things about the Black Panther is the fact that it is properly multi-layered in terms of the messages that it sends. So it sends out a message about family. It sends out a message about belonging. It also sends out a very powerful message to Black people about their own worth and about their potential. And that's what I think vibranium actually is. And then you have a villain, an antagonist, shall we say, who is probably one of the most compelling and understandable characters, I would say, in definitely modern movie history, but arguably is up there with the canons of Western literature. I'd go so far as to say that, because he has been dealt a whole set of wrong cards for no other reason than the supposed crime of his father was judiciously or not dealt with by his uncle. You know, his father was killed, and then the whole set of circumstances then runs on from there. So in terms of a compelling antagonist, you've got it there. You've got intra-bat politics, African-Americans and how they view Africans and vice versa. You've got the place of the oppressed, etc. I think, you know, there are lots of really clever messages. And then apart from that, it's just a beautiful thing actually to behold. Sorry that you didn't enjoy it. And the one thing I would say is that the message of the film isn't that violence solves everything, because arguably, there's no arguably about it, T'Challa, the Black Panther, comes round almost to the view of Eric Killmonger, but without the worldwide revolution. So he does end up giving the technology to the world, or at least offering it to the world. So violence wasn't the answer. Actually, he saw the power of Eric's argument, but would just want to do it in a very different way. But anyway, Julie, thank you for your email, and maybe you can go and listen to Lexicon Valley because it's awesome. But Luce.
Yes.
Shall we quickly have an ad break? So we come back the other side after some adverts, because you've got a walkie-talkie coming up soon, haven't you?
I have.
Ooh, right. So there's an advert for your walkie-talkie, which is coming up soon. Millie Bell, and then me with my stuff at the other side.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Listening to this podcast, you're most probably listening through a pair of headphones, which means I have the perfect sponsor with the perfect product for you. It's Studio, and they want to revolutionize the way people see headphones. Generally, fashionable headphones tend to lack the proper sound quality, and the high-tech ones are bulky and not design-orientated. Studio bridged that gap while emphasizing sleek, modern Scandinavian design. To get a 15% discount on any of their wares, go to studiosweden.com, which is spelled SUDIO Sweden.com, and simply put in the code DTD when purchasing a pair of headphones.
Hi, this is Lucy, and you're listening to Walkie Talkie. Every day I walk my dog in and around Epping Forest, and there's a regular group of dog walkers that catch up with each other, and the group of us, you know, we're from all kinds of different backgrounds. The one thing we have in common is that we all have dogs, obviously. And I sort of came up with the idea of recording these conversations because there's something quite confessional about walking side by side with somebody. There's no eye contact. You can just plod along. You know the names of their dog. You quite often don't know their name. You definitely don't know their surname. And it's just a very odd little hour out of the day, and you can get some really startling insights into people's lives because they know that you don't have a relationship with them outside of the dog. And also, if things get a bit, you know, emotional or a bit too close, you can distract yourself with whatever the dog's doing, or you get quite close to people in a remote way. It's an intriguing sort of mixture. With people's permission, obviously, I started recording some of the conversations. And it sort of grew, and now people ask if they can come on the walk even though they don't have a dog, because I think they just like the space to talk. So this is Walkie Talkie. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you in the forest.
G'day everyone. We started off our week with a question about whether Joe will disclose what he knows. We know that he's holding to his chest a secret. Claire Mansell said, "I love this community. It helps me get so much more out of the Archers. I listened to the episode and convinced myself that Nick's dying words were, 'Kiss me,' which Joe followed with, 'No, you're confused. You don't know what you're saying.' Nick having said it because she knew she was going to die. Will wasn't there and she wanted to have a last bit of affection. Ah, but now I realise this was just a subplot that existed only in my head." Joanne Smith said, as much as I want a resolution to Matt's hit and run, I really can't believe that Nick is the sort of person who could nearly kill him, then act perfectly normally for months afterwards. Sigh. Maybe she found the church money hidden under George's mattress. Dan Lord said, completely missed the last words bit of Friday's episode. Nick was saying she'd been bad and done wrong. Confession to Joe. That makes Joe's village wandering around and conversations make a bit more sense. So, what does he know? And Liz Villalova said he will, but through some clumsiness on his part as an amateur sleuth. Tell me, Kenton Archer, how was Matt Crawford injured? And we also discussed whether we anticipate any other repercussions from Brian's rather short-sighted decision many years ago. And Neri Elizabeth said, is there one big boss in the family corporation? If so, Brian may be out and Adam in. That's very possible. We also thought that Chris was lovely with William through the week, and it was so hard to know what to say or do, and William is obsessing at the moment, which makes it harder. And Chris also dealt with Alice really well, but Rona Skeen pointed out that Chris's constant encouraging her to drink is a bit odd. Either he hasn't noticed she's got a problem, or he has and he doesn't mind. Either way, he's not dealing with her very well. That is actually really interesting. A number of people are saying that he might be enabling her drinking. And Mark Everton would like us to know that he always thinks Chris is lovely. And we told him he had to behave himself. We also had a discussion about that very, very strange episode where it seemed like a carry-on movie, a bit like a 1970s sitcom, and it didn't quite hit the mark, I didn't think. Every time Jennifer spoke, I was hearing Kenneth Williams repeating what she was saying. And there was a range of opinions on it. Mike Hatton said, it definitely seemed somewhat incongruous, particularly so after the somber nature of the previous few episodes. I was surprised that Nick's death wasn't mentioned. From the thought of Roy in his underwear to Jennifer enthusing over her 50-odd year-old son's deposits, not something I want to think about as I drift off to sleep tonight. And Leslie Greaves said, everyday story of country folk, women discussing her son's sperm with his surrogate and her partner. Creepy. Peter Mabbott said that was an appallingly bad episode, was just waiting for an ooh-oh missus from Adam to make it complete. Was complete bollocks. Actually, Peter, I thought it was complete bollocks as well. Nicholas Nitzler said, occasionally the artists do comedy. It is relentlessly mirthless, and that's part of its charm. And Robin Cotty said, nope, no enjoyment here. I usually listen more than once, but not this time. Tom Collins said, oh my goodness, I felt like I was listening to Margot Ledbetter or an Alan Ayckbourn comedy. And there was lots more in that vein. I think it just didn't hit the mark for some of us aficionados. We also discussed the new career option for Toby, and the general consensus is that this would probably be a better career option for Rex, but we now know, of course, that he's turned that down. And there was a lot of discussion about the way William was treating Joe during the week. We understand that William's hurting, but poor Joe. And I'm pretty sure that Witherspoon will cover that in his roundup. But Neri Elizabeth said, generally Joe annoys me, but my heart breaks for him, especially his bravery in recent days. So it's been a bit of an up and down week on Facebook. It's gone very quiet on the forum, so please jump over there and have a chat with Purple Pumpkin, who would like to talk about Will. Of course, stay and talk to me with the spoon and sometimes Yokel Bear on Facebook. We're happy to talk to you on whichever forum you like. So until next week, I would like to say to you, hooroo.
Thank you for that, Miss Bell. That was tip top. Lucy, hashtag the Archers tweets of the last 7 days, please.
The first one is from Kerry Warbis, whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday, Kerry Warbis. If you don't follow Kerry, you probably should do, because she is very, very funny about the Archers. She says, hashtag Nick's last words, the bunting is in my attic. The Ambridge Observer had Brian saying, family is everything to me, which is why I had two at one stage. Andy D. Make the Tea said, I don't know what the hell is the context was for this, but it made me laugh. It takes 9 months to grow a baby, but only 6 in a polytunnel. Yes. Steve Brooks 13 said, is Georgie upset because he won't be able to dip into Nick's purse anymore? And Beak Moo, tweet of the week, hashtag the Archers. Wouldn't it be brilliant if Will's head really did explode, especially if he was standing next to Shula at the time? He's lost his wife, for the love of God.
Oh. Folks, dumbydum.com, go there. It's got shops, it's got all sorts. It's got tractor. You can pin yourself to a map of the world. The great expanse of the world. Stop, I ain't finished. Right. Great expanse of the world. And you can see if another dumbydum listener lives nearby, because we've got like listeners in Romania. We've got them in Vietnam. We've got them in Cambodia. Pin yourself to the map, folks, on dumbydum.com. Also, you can go back, listen to back catalogue shows of dumbydum, and you can do other things besides. Oh, and you can go look at character counts. Now it's in red.
If you would like to help keep our little show on the road, there are two ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on the site, or you can sponsor us via patreon.com.
And remember, if you do sponsor us via patreon.com, you get an extra show this week. So that'd be awesome. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, which is called dumbydum.com. You can call us on 0203-031-3105. Put a +44, knock off the first zero. If you are outside of the United Kingdom, how long will it still be united for with these border issues in Ireland? I don't know. I don't know at all. No politics, Roy Field. On social media specifically, Twitter, you can call me where I'm at.
You can call me. Edit yourself as you go along. Fill in your own irritated listener emails.
Sorry if you're definitely a Brexiteer, but you are on the wrong side of history here. Anyway, on Twitter, you can find me and Lucy where we are at dumdydum. Lucy's at?
Lucy V. Freeman.
And I can be found at Royfield on Facebook. Sorry, Lucy.
No, I was just going to say that as Robert has managed to make it through an entire 3 weeks without falling off anything, breaking anything, fracturing anything, or cutting himself open on anything, he will be back next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.